WUSP 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. The following show was taped in September of 2015. Karen Davis, our guest, has passed away in the past month. Karen Davis worked for decades to raise awareness and advocate for the compassionate and respectful treatments of chickens, turkeys, ducks, and other domestic birds. And I won't say too much more about her because I will tell you exactly who she is in the coming show. And on that note, here we go. And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program as part of Natural Alternatives. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And that is what all of us really do want deep down inside. That's right, all of us. All of us of sane mind and body, deep down, want to create a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. The topic we're going to be covering on this evening's program is critical toward achieving that end. For those of you who are driving, enjoying your Friday evening, and wanting to relax, it may not be entirely comfortable to listen to this program. But then, as you may know, most personal growth and self-realization is at first not such good news. How many of you have tried to meditate? You close your eyes, you still the waters, you concentrate on your breathing. A common complaint from those new to this practice is that they couldn't stop thinking. They say, my thoughts wouldn't stop. I can't calm my mind. I keep thinking about the past or the future, and it doesn't work. I couldn't do it. Meditation just is not for me. That's very common. Now, and for those of you who have gotten past that point, you understand this. I'm going to let you in on a little secret that is actually going to be a massive realization for some of you. Are you ready? That is that same unending cascade of thoughts, emotions, scenes from the past, projections of the future, that you glimpse when you begin to meditate, is what's going on in your mind at all times, including right now, even though you don't hear it. We think it's just us, our personality, the way we react, the things we choose, but it really is a lot to do with that noise. And that noise, that cascade of thoughts, emotions, and feelings, may have very little to do with who we aspire to being. So while you might stand for a clean, healthy, compassionate world, the life and dietary choices that you make might end up creating just the opposite. And that has to do with that endless chatter in your minds that follows you everywhere. I want a clean environment. But our inner voice has us using plastic bags and eating animal products that create just the opposite. I want perfect health. But those inner voices have us eating junk foods and binge eating. I love animals and I want them to be treated kindly. But those strong inner voices have us eating meat, which is supporting the industry that's responsible for creating more culturally accepted violence and suffering than anything else on the planet. And that's because a very strong component to those inner voices in your minds that you don't even know are there are what you were taught as a child and what society's norms are in the culture you happen to live in today. So if you grow up in a family and in a place that glorifies suicide bombings against innocent civilians, you may well take that on and say, yeah, that's me. Or if you live in a society that watches Christians being killed for sport in a large arena or a coliseum maybe, you may well do the same. Hey, Dad, are we going to the Coliseum this weekend? And your inner voices will tell you that that's okay. Obviously, that's not what we want. One of the ways out of being trapped in actions and behaviors that don't support what our higher selves really stands for is to take a clear look at what our actions are creating in the world. This gives us a chance to interrupt that automatic internal dialogue in order to create something new. And when you do that, it's time for celebration. It's not a chore or a task or something that brings you down. It's an enlightening. It's an enlightening as you are becoming more and more the you that you want to be deep down. Tonight's show over the next hour is just such an opportunity to become awakened to things that you may very well have not thought clearly about thus far. It has to do with what you're eating, how you came to eat what you eat, how that food arrived on your plate, and what the money you spend on that choice has created in the world. Again, this may seem like bad news at first, but on the other side of this is the empowerment that comes from living the life you aspire to live, what you really stand for, not just what your conditioning and the habits of, or whatever happened to you as a child are creating in your choices right now. So in a moment, I am really happy to say that we are going to be joined by a legend in the movements to create less suffering in this world. Her name is Karen Davis, and she is an author of many books, founder and president of United Poultry Concerns. You'll hear more about her in just a moment, so stay tuned. And I'm really happy to be joined by a very special guest this evening. Her name is Karen Davis, and she is the founder and president of the United Poultry Concerns, a nonprofit organization that promotes the compassionate and respectful treatment of domestic fowl, including a sanctuary for chickens in Virginia. In 2002, she was inducted into the National Animal Rights Hall of Fame for outstanding contributions to animal liberation. Karen has written chapters in a very long list of books and is the author of Prison's Chickens, Poisoned Eggs, An Inside Look at the Modern Poultry Industry, More Than a Meal, The Turkey in History, Myth, Ritual, and Reality, The Holocaust and the Handmaid's Tale, A Case for Comparing Atrocities, A Home for Henny, and finally, Instead of Chicken, Instead of Turkey, A Poultryless Poultry Potpourri. Karen's works, letters to the editor, and op-eds have been featured in the New York Times, New Yorker, New York Daily News, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Washington Times, Washingtonian, Chicago Tribune, Harper's Magazine, Atlantic Monthly, The Nation, Los Angeles Times, Egg Industry, Feedstuffs, Veg News, Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association, Canadian Veterinary Journal, USA Today, and many others. The list is too long for me to read. Karen has appeared on numerous TV and radio shows, including The Howard Stern Show, The Daily Show, Fact Finders on WB Channel 11 News at 10 in New York City, 1010 Wins, John Montone Reports, CBS New York, Fox Television, and This American Life on National Public Radio. Another long list. I can't say enough about her, but you will be hearing a lot of what she has to say. Join me in welcoming Karen Davis. Hello, Karen.
Hello, Bob.
Such a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you for your lovely introduction.
All right, of course. I can't say enough.
Organization.
Thank you. And I have to say that from my perspective, nobody has done as much over a long period of time to raise awareness about the plight of chickens and other birds on this planet as you. And given that if one had to pick the land animals that are by sheer numbers the most used and abused on this planet, it would have to be the birds and specifically the chickens. That makes you and your work incredibly important on a global scale. So with that, I thank you.
Well, I thank you, and I thank you, Bob, for this opportunity to present some of this information to your listeners, hoping that they will be influenced and inspired to want to help the birds and themselves.
I have a feeling that we have a good number of people listening who are open and are about to hear something that will change their lives. So there's so much to cover, and I'm going to get you started, however, by asking you to describe the mission you've taken on, so that people know how you got to be doing this and what you actually do, and then take the time you need to give our audience a sense of who these chickens and turkeys are. Give us a glimpse into their social lives and their mental states, and illustrate, the way you do so well, some of the great stories you have about the individuals that you've come to know.
Well, one thing that's very important, Bob, is what you just said, that these birds are individuals. They're not just blobs. They're not just members of a flock. They're not just a mass of faceless, brainless beings. They are highly individual animals. They are also very sociable, both chickens and turkeys. And I will, first of all, explain what led me to start United Poultry Concerns. This is our 26th year of operation. Back in the late 1980s, I was reading extensively into all of animal rights literature, even going back into earlier centuries, because there is a literature that goes back into earlier centuries that is largely unknown. But I was learning in the late 1980s the extent to which farmed animals represent 95 or more percent of all abused animals on the planet. And of that 95%, 99% are birds, the majority of whom are chickens. They represent roughly 9 out of 10 billion animals being raised and slaughtered for food each year in the United States alone. So the numbers are astronomical, very difficult to even begin to comprehend. Well, back in the late 1980s, when I was immersing myself in this literature about our treatment of animals worldwide and through history, I increasingly began to think that I would like to start an organization that would focus on farmed animals. But because I have had such a lifelong love for birds, all kinds of birds, and learning that chickens represented the largest number of abused land animals on the earth, I decided that I wanted to focus my attention as an organization on educating people about chickens and turkeys and other domestic fowl. And by domestic fowl, I mean those birds who have the misfortune of being considered a food source for people. And that includes quails, who live miserable lives. I wish I could tell you all about the miserable treatment they receive. But these birds are very, very much abused and misunderstood for a variety of reasons. Certainly, it is in the industry of exploiters to minimize the intelligence and the feelings of creatures they want to abuse, whether those creatures happen to be human or other than human. So back in the late 1980s, I put my thoughts about what I wanted to do, start an organization that would focus on chickens, turkeys, and other domesticated fowl, to some people I had come to know in the animal advocacy movement. And while there were a couple of very important leaders in our movement who were totally supportive and really said, go for it, which of course I did, there were others who said, oh, you're never going to get an organization to fly that focuses on chickens. If we can't even get people to care about whales, how do you expect to ever get anybody to care about chickens? And my response to that was and is, well, our job as advocates, as animal advocates, is to get people to care, to show people why they should care. And part of that involves learning about the animals you're speaking for, really learning about them, reading about them, having personal contact with them if possible, and just educating yourself, which is what I did. In the late 1980s, I began to just bury myself in learning about who chickens are in the natural environment. And I learned that chickens come from the tropical forests of Southeast Asia, and their wild relatives live there to this day, although their habitat is being steadily eroded by agriculture. So, and just the land is being taken away from them by human uses of various kinds. Certainly agriculture is a big one. So I learned that even though chickens and turkeys have been genetically manipulated for physical characteristics that particularly are designed to turn them into food products, the nature of chickens, fundamentally domesticated chickens, is no different from their wild relatives, their wild ancestors and wild relatives. And this is a fact that I have seen repeated and replicated at our sanctuary for chickens and turkeys, too, here in Machipongo, Virginia, on the eastern shore of Virginia. In any case, I knew that I wanted to start this organization no matter what anybody said, and that I was going to do that. And so I started United Poultry Concerns officially in 1990. We became a 501c3 nonprofit organization, a tax-exempt organization, and that was 26 years ago, starting on October 3rd. And we have been working steadily to educate people about these birds, to advocate on behalf of them. We run campaigns. I've written several books that you mentioned. I've written hundreds and published hundreds of articles, book chapters, letters to the editor, guest columns in newspapers, and done various television and radio shows. And I have done what I can do to try to reach into the public consciousness and help people to understand who these birds are, that the stereotypes of chickens, for example, and turkeys, that they are dirty and stupid. These stereotypes are completely 100% false. And I can say that based not only on my own experience, daily intimate experience with these birds at our sanctuary, through all these years, because I really started keeping chickens in 1985. And even though I didn't grow up around them, meeting them just really made such a huge impression upon me. Watching chickens dust bathe is just such a moving experience because you're seeing how earthy these birds are. And then you learn that chickens after World War II were essentially taken off the ground, off the earth, and put into cages, especially for the egg industry, or in the case of the chicken meat and turkey industries, put into huge, filthy warehouses, where to this day, the majority of these earth-loving birds are forced to live. Now, it's not only that chickens and turkeys love the earth. Let me tell you something about turkeys, for example, because I wrote a book about turkeys, More Than a Meal, The Turkey in History, Myth, Ritual, and Reality. And to write that book, I did extensive research into the history of our relationship with turkeys, that is, the Native American relationship to turkeys, as much as is known about that, the European assault upon the Americas that certainly included turkeys, that is assault, well, an assault, devastation. I learned about how turkeys behave in their natural habitat, which was all of the Americas in the 15th and 16th centuries when the Europeans came to the Americas. These turkeys lived everywhere except in the coldest regions of upstate New York and Canada. They lived in what became North America, South America, Central America, and turkeys are so interesting because they are at home in every element. Turkeys love the earth. They love to run. They love to walk. They fly 50 miles an hour. And how many people listening to your show, including maybe you, Bob, know that turkeys are very good swimmers? And it's so interesting to see photographs of turkeys swimming and to read some of the accounts of some of the early Europeans seeing and writing about how the baby turkeys could swim, the adult turkeys could swim. So this is a bird who is at home everywhere except in a concentration camp, which is where most of the turkeys bred and raised for the turkey meat industry are trapped and confined in absolute misery. Turkeys and chickens both have very strongly developed social lives. They are very, very attached to the earth itself. They have excellent eyesight, much better than our eyesight. They see full spectrum color vision, including ultraviolet light and infrared light.
Mm.
They have very precise beaks and that coordinate with their eyes and their ears so that they can hear through long distances, because remember, chickens coming from the tropical forest, all tropical forest animals, it seems, or many that we're familiar with, including monkeys and peafowl and others, they you know, they scream and yell, they make a lot of, you know, they have very loud voices, which many people complain about, but people need to understand that when you and your flock or your group live in very, very dense forest habitats, and you spread out during the day, you have to be able to keep contact with one another through the dense foliage. And that's a reason why chickens, for example, crow, why roosters crow. They keep tabs on each other throughout the day. And it's also a fact that people say, well, you know, why do roosters crow when it's still dark out every day? Well, they do, because for chickens, it's no longer dark when it still is for us, because chickens see daylight about an hour before humans do.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, so you see, they are totally attuned to the rhythms of the day and of the seasons, and to the many, many communications that are taking place between and amongst themselves. So before you ask me another question, I just want to underline the fact that these chickens and turkeys, their senses are vibrant and alive, and they are very, very aware of each other and of the environments in which they find themselves, for better or worse. And they are very attentive creatures. And that doesn't matter whether they have been bred to be so heavy they can't even stand up on their legs anymore, whether they've been forced to live in a cage with their beaks burned off. It doesn't matter. These birds are very attentive and aware of their surroundings. And that includes not only the physical surroundings, but the emotional atmosphere in which they live and find themselves.
And I think the vast majority of what you're saying is news to everybody speaking, because the industry portrays chickens and turkeys in a very different way. And of course, they have to do that. A Harris poll came out last year, and it stated that nearly all pet owners, 95%, considered their pets, and they call them pets, to be members of the family. So it's one of the great contradictions in our modern-day society that we share a connection with animals that's deep and profound, and yet we pay for their killing of chickens, turkeys, cows, and pigs, and others in order to satisfy what's just a passing desire and also a social, dad did it and grandpa did it. So the poultry industry obviously can't let you think that these animals share anything in common with the animals that you know and love as part of your family. So speak just for a moment about how the poultry industry portrays them compared to how they actually are.
Well, the poultry industry wants, as you are saying, wants people to be completely dissociated mentally and emotionally from the birds. I mean, the entire agribusiness wants you to... they want you to be a consumer, first of all. They want you to be a consumer of their products. And they want you to think of these animals not as animals or fellow creatures or like your pets or companion animals. They want you to think of them as food. They talk amongst themselves as an industry about these birds. The language they use is product. They talk about them as product and units of production. And it was interesting to read a few years ago the turkey industry trying to decide every Thanksgiving whether it's going to encourage people to want to eat more turkey at Thanksgiving if they kind of caricature the chicken or the turkey as an individual with a face and all of that,
mm-hmm.
or whether they should do everything possible to present the turkey through the news media as an anonymous food production entity. And so every Thanksgiving you'll see the turkey industry kind of vacillate between wanting the turkey to be represented as a caricature, you know, stupid and whatnot through the news media, and at the same time to turn the turkey into a non-being. Here's another example. When the chicken industry was forming in the 20th century, the Chicken Trade Organization Association called itself the National Broiler Council. And broiler, of course, referring to chickens who are intended to be raised and slaughtered and consumed as a meat product. But over time, they finally were successful enough in getting the word chicken to be represented in the consumer's mind as a food without any thought of chickens or a chicken as a living being, that the National Broiler Council then changed its name to the National Chicken Council, because they felt that there was no longer any danger that the average person would think of a chicken or as chickens as live beings with feelings and lives of their own, but only think of them as chicken without a definite article or an indefinite article such as the or a,
right,
for the word. So you have a situation where the majority of people are completely dissociated from both chickens and turkeys. They're dissociated from animals when they think food, for the most part, even though through most of history and in many parts of the world today, that certainly was not the case, because people were farmers and they raised their own animals and they helped them give birth, and they slaughtered them, and they slaughtered them in front of each other, and they did know that they were animals, and that they did know that they were living beings and members of families and fathers and mothers and all of that, but they could still slaughter them and eat them. So whether, you know, what kinds of connections are people making in those cases is something that, you know, we're still trying to understand the psychology of all that. Some farmers would favor one cow or one chicken, and that still goes on, where the kind of circle is drawn around a particular individual who's not going to be slaughtered or is going to be treated as a pet, but while the rest are not inside that enchanted circle, and they are going to be. But it was really in the 20th century, particularly during and after World War II, that chickens and turkeys disappeared, particularly chickens, disappeared from the outdoor landscape entirely. Laws were passed to forbid people from keeping chickens and turkeys and geese as they had traditionally done, really since time immemorial, and certainly in the United States of America, people kept chickens and turkeys even in cities. And if you read about the state of London during the Middle Ages, my goodness, the chickens and turkeys who had been brought from this continent, the turkeys, back in those centuries, they were in crates and cages and walking around in the streets of London. And so there has been this long, long connection. And again, in other parts of the world, people see chickens, or not chickens so much perhaps, well, chickens, but certainly they see mammals and they see animals being driven to market. It's an everyday occurrence to such an extent that they don't see them because it's just part of the familiar landscape. So one of the ironies that chickens, turkeys, and other farmed animals have to endure is that when they are being used as part of everyday life, people tend not to see them anymore because they're just part of the everyday life that people are living. And then when they disappear into factory farms, then, once again, people don't see them anymore because they are literally physically out of sight. So they're in a kind of situation where they can't win.
You are listening to WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet radio program. You're listening to a replay of a show that we did in September of 2015 with the recently passed Karen Davis of the United Poultry Concerns. She's created changes that most of us will never understand. Of course, everyone is sad to see her gone, and at the same time, joyous with the memory of all that she's done to improve the well-being of so many creatures on this planet, including human creatures. And now back to Karen Davis.
Now, I do want to emphasize this, however. There are more and more people today, even though the population is growing so far beyond what we can keep up with as vegans and animal advocates and so on, notwithstanding, in this country, for example, more and more people are becoming educated about and coming to love chickens and turkeys because there are more and more farmed animal sanctuaries than there ever have been before. Back in the early 80s, I don't think there were any farmed animal sanctuaries in this country. I don't know about the rest of the world. But then farm sanctuaries started in the mid-1980s. And in Watkins Glen, New York now, and in California, but back then in Wilmington, Delaware, and Watkins Glen, Avondale, Pennsylvania. And I was one of their very early interns back then. And that was certainly an experience that was very instrumental in my decision to start an organization for chickens and turkeys. But now we have farmed animal sanctuaries just blossoming all over this country. And one of the great things about the internet is that for people who cannot literally visit a farmed animal sanctuary and get to meet the animals, get to meet the chickens and the turkeys and the ducks and other animals, they can meet them through the internet, because there are just wonderful videos of these birds and other animals who have been rescued, and their stories are told, and that includes United Poultry Concerns. We have always told our stories of our birds on our website and through the writings I do and through the videos we take. So there is a growing interest in and a better understanding of these birds as individuals. And certainly I myself have contributed enormously to the interest that the animal advocacy movement has now developed in these birds, understanding and appreciating that they are affectionate and sociable and wonderful to have around. And so you have that happening against, of course, the ocean of human population explosion all over the world, and more people throughout the world, as soon as they have a little discretionary money to spend, as their incomes raise, become raised, we're happy that their lives are better. But one of the sad things about that is that they start wanting to eat more animal products. They want to use more products that involve leather and fur. And, of course, eating animals and animal products just becomes a sign of an improved station in society and more money to spend, mm-hmm. and all of that. So, it's a very big complex situation. Another example is here in this country, back about 15 years ago, an interest began to develop in moving away from industrialized food products and starting to grow your own vegetables, which is good, which is great, and the movement to eat and raise food that has been grown locally, grow it locally, eat locally grown food and all of that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
As far as vegetables and fruits are concerned, that's really great. Where chickens particularly are concerned, it has become a very big problem. The positive side of it is that many people who never knew a chicken before, who maybe started keeping a few chickens so they could have eggs, suddenly discovered that, oh, these chickens are really interesting. They have personalities. They know their names. They follow you around. Some of them like to sit in your lap. If you pet them under their chin, which is so sensitive, they will purr. And people have videoed this going on, and they're like shocked and in a happy way to discover that, you know, chickens are birds. They are friendly. They have their own individual personalities. So that has been a good thing. But the other side of it is that most municipalities that have started allowing people to keep a few chickens, which again, as I mentioned, back in the mid-15th century, the poultry industry succeeded in getting local municipalities to ban people keeping their own birds, partly because of all the diseases that developed as birds started to be concentrated in large numbers, but also because the industry wanted you to buy the birds from the industry and not be keeping your own. So now there's been a reversal where many people who can afford to be locavores and have their own farmers markets and whatnot, even in cities, now they want to keep a few chickens. But for every hen born, there's a rooster, and the roosters are almost always banned. And that means that if you live in a town or a city or a neighborhood where chickens are allowed, you may be able to have, as a resident, you may be able to have two or four, maybe maximum of six chickens, but you're not allowed to have any roosters. Well, what happens to all the roosters? Well, it's interesting that most people who are keeping these backyard chickens as an idea, as a way of getting back to nature and eating locally and escaping industrialization and all of that, are actually purchasing their hens from huge industrial factory farms, particularly located in the Midwest, but elsewhere. But the Midwest is a big source of these mega hatcheries. So people order them through the mail. They come as air mail. A lot of times these huge hatcheries will actually include a few roosters in the box that was ordered by the customer who only wanted maybe a dozen hens, baby hens, young hens, pullets.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have two or three roosters, lo and behold, and their town doesn't allow them to keep roosters, or they just don't want any roosters crowing or whatever. And so one of the very sad outcomes of the backyard chicken keeping trend is that there are millions of unwanted roosters, and all of us sanctuary people are just always dealing with people who are saying, could you please find a home for my rooster or my three roosters or my six roosters? And so that's one of the things that, you know, makes the backyard chicken keeping trend a very unfortunate thing. And again, people need to understand that most of these birds are coming from these big factory farm hatchery operations. So they're not really escaping from industrialization at all. And because hens have been bred and overbred and inbred to lay way, way too many eggs for their own well-being, these hens develop all kinds of ovarian problems, all kinds of complicated reproductive problems that shorten their lives and cause them a great deal of suffering. And many people still keeping a few chickens as backyard chickens, do not think it worthwhile to provide even veterinary care for them. So that's another issue that we find, that people who would, of course, take their dog or their cat to the veterinarian do not even think about doing that when they decide to keep chickens.
Yeah, and it, of course, this isn't just limited to backyard chickens. In commercial chicken farms, when they're producing eggs, all those little baby chicks that are boys end up, well, you tell us how they end up.
Well, in the egg industry, the baby roosters, they can't lay eggs, right? They're not going to grow up and become egg layers because they're not female. Therefore, they have no economic value to the egg industry. So the egg industry either suffocates them to death in large plastic trash bags, or increasingly they throw them into grinders, which are called macerators, and they just grind them up alive. And this is happening all the time, all over the world. So you have an industry, the egg industry, which creates millions and millions of beings who, after they grow inside their egg and then struggle out of their shells, are immediately thrown into plastic bags to suffocate on top of each other by the millions, or thrown into grinding machines to be ground up as soon as they are born. And anybody who's ever watched any of the undercover videos of these hatcheries of both baby chicks and baby turkeys, and hears them peeping and realizes, you know, really the poultry industry and the egg industry, they're maniacal beyond anything. Everything about how they treat the birds, all the machinery, the filth, the diseases, because of this industry, we have created an endless number of birds constantly proliferating in a condition of sickness and absolute misery, and being forced to experience their lives under conditions that their psyches, their nature did not in any way develop, but that are a reflection of our nature. So these birds are in conditions that are completely alien to them and that are completely destructive to their own natures and to who they are. So as many people know, many of the diseases of production, and the industry will call them diseases of production, these are diseases that the birds and other animals too, but I'm focusing on chickens and turkeys right now, that they develop as a result of how they are being forced to live and the horrible genetic conditions that have been imposed upon them. In the case of chickens, for example, in the meat industry, all the industry wants them to turn into is a big blob of breast muscle tissue. So now, you know, you will see the breast of a typical so-called broiler chicken, which is huge and the size of like a filet mignon. This means that for the birds themselves, when they're alive, and we have several right here in our sanctuary right now, first of all, they're growing so large and so fast to such a huge size. A one-pound bird in nature becomes 6 pounds in the industry.
Wow.
In 5 to 6 weeks. So their legs and their bones can't support the rapidly growing huge body weight. They are disproportioned because their breast muscle is like this big, heavy, hanging thing on their body. And most of the birds, when you go into the chicken houses, and I should tell your listeners that our organization, United Poultry Concerns, is in Virginia, but we are in the poultry-producing part of Virginia known as the Delmarva Peninsula, comprising all of Delaware, the eastern shore of Maryland and Virginia, and we're in Virginia. So, you know, we are seeing the condition of these birds, how they can't walk, how they are so large that you take a little tiny chick who'd be running all over the place and peeping, peeping her or his head off, and then occasionally one of these birds will fall out of the trucks on the way to the slaughter plants, because there are huge Tyson and Purdue and other chicken slaughterhouses down here, and over 5,000 chicken houses. You know, there. If you didn't know that you were looking at a chicken house, you would think you were just looking at long, low warehouses down here. You would not believe that when you see 10 or 15 500-foot-long buildings completely sealed up, lined in a row, all over the place down here, that each one contains 20 to 30 or more thousand baby chicks who are going to be slaughtered at 6 weeks old. Well, when you breed these birds to become this extremely obese and disproportioned creature, the birds that people are falsely told is a health food, which is the opposite of the facts, this is what the industry itself, the researchers, say about these chickens that people consider to be a health food, Purdue, Tyson, and whatnot, that they have a variety of health problems involving muscular, digestive, cardiovascular, integumentary, skeletal, and immune systems. They suffer from a constellation of debilitating diseases. See, people don't understand that, first of all, if they're eating chicken wings, they're probably mainly eating parts of their backbone or something. They don't, you know, because their wings have bones in them. So when they say they, you know, you're eating a boneless wing, you're probably not. But that's just another example of the birds are dismembered and dissociated from themselves and from the mind of the consumer, who doesn't care in most cases. But these birds are fundamentally ill and unfit. And when you keep animals, as these chickens and turkeys are living, in basically cesspool conditions, you're going to have, as with human beings, you're going to have a paradise of pathogens. You're going to have diseases. And these birds go to slaughter covered with salmonella bacteria, campylobacter bacteria, and a range of other, like, you know, bacteria that make people sick, including listeria, yersinia, something called Clostridium perfringens. It is one of the biggest causes, this particular bacterium, Clostridium perfringens. It turns the bird's own intestines into pus and jelly. And it is one of those bacteria that are passed on to humans and make humans sick. Salmonella, I mean, when Consumer Reports does their investigations by going into supermarkets and buying, for example, let's say in 2014, they purchased 300 chicken breasts from a variety of different kinds of stores, including upscale stores and regular supermarkets and whatnot. They found that 97% of those 300 chicken breasts purchased by their investigators included dangerous bacteria. By dangerous, they mean the kinds of bacteria that make humans sick, and that can kill people, and that do kill people, because each year, in this country alone, food poisoning, mainly from animal products, kills at least 3,000 Americans each year and makes at least 48 million sick. And those are statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So another
thing, this has been known for a while. This is not new news.
No, it isn't. But, you know, the question is, how do you get people to understand that the contamination and the cruelty are linked? The cruelty to the birds, and the cruelty includes forcing these birds who come from the fresh, beautiful forests and are living in basically, well, we call it sick chickens cooped in poop. They are standing on all of this excrement, and not only that of themselves as a flock of 20 or 30 or more thousand, but all of their predecessors, because the poultry industry only cleans out these 500, 600-foot-long buildings every few years. If you go into a standard chicken or turkey house, even one that has been emptied, the birds have all been sent to the slaughter plants, your eyes and your throat just burn from the ammonia fumes. And these ammonia fumes come from the buildup of an abnormal tonnage of the droppings from the birds. And moreover, in the case of the chickens raised for meat, their bodies are abnormal. And so their droppings aren't even like a normal chicken's. And, of course, the hens in the egg industry, their droppings go down into these manure pits. And, again, you know, when chickens are out in the real world, and as they're supposed to be, outdoors, their droppings contain uric acid, which is a nitrogen product that in the right amounts is very, very good for the soil and for plants. But when it is accumulated in these factory farm buildings, then it becomes a poison. It becomes ammonia fumes. And ammonia fumes are, well, if anybody's ever been subjected to a very dirty cat litter box, they know what that smell is like. But imagine these poor birds with their delicate eyes and their breathing, and they have to not only sit in excrement, but they are breathing it. It gets into their skin. It can actually penetrate eggs. All of this has been scientifically documented. And, you know, they are living in a toxic waste environment. And, again, it is so ironic to hear people say that they think that, you know, that chicken is a health food, or that the chicken, that if by eating chicken they're doing a better thing for the environment than if they were eating beef or, you know, eating cows. And yet, right. That just isn't true. People don't understand the terrible conditions that the poultry industry places on the communities in which they establish themselves. Right now, down here on the lower eastern shore of Virginia, in Accomack County and Northampton County, where we're located, citizens are trying to stop the chicken industry, particularly Tyson and Perdue, from erecting anywhere from 20 to 50 new chicken houses. This area has this little peninsula. It's only like 50 to 70 miles across and 150 to 170 miles long. It's a very thin strip of land. At any given time, over a half a billion chickens are locked up in these concentration camps here, in these filthy cesspool warehouses. The workers themselves live in these trailers. The water is polluted, the wells are polluted, people have high concentrations of cancers and other diseases down here. And, you know, when people say, oh, well, I care about humans more than animals, well, if people really care about humans, they should never want a fellow human being to ever have to walk into another slaughterhouse for a 8 to 10 hour day again in their lives, because it's a miserable occupation and it brings out the worst in people. Every single undercover investigation that has been done, every single one at every Tyson and Perdue operation, shows that the workers under these conditions abuse the chickens and the turkeys in every conceivable way. They pull their heads off, they torture them, they kick them, they beat them. This is going on a daily basis. It brings out the worst in human beings.
Karen, so, unbelievable amount of information. I wanted to continue as long as possible. We are out of time. I'll leave you with a closing thought.
Oh, me?
Yes. A brief closing thought.
Let me just say this. Don't just switch from beef to chicken. Get the slaughterhouse out of your kitchen. Please be vegan. For the animals, for yourself, and for this planet. It's the best thing you could ever do. And remember that vegan is about the food you choose, but it's about a whole relationship to life and to our fellow creatures and to the earth that sustains us. So we hear that a lot, but these words really do mean everything. So be kind to all living beings and let's do everything we can to make this earth a better place for all of us. And thank you for your attention this evening. And Bob, it's just been such an opportunity that I can't thank you enough.
All right, and it is always a pleasure to have you. either speaking or on the radio. It's just I think we need to repeat this just so that you can get to the other one-tenth of the information, and then we could have you for another 10 shows and you wouldn't get to all of it. But, you know, just the way you outline all these issues, and you're talking about these chickens that are killed at 6 months when they would normally live to 35 years?
Chickens can live up to 35 years.
Up to 35 years.
Yes, they can.
Yeah, so we're eating babies. With the egg operations, we're grinding or suffocating all the males. Even the humane, the quote-unquote humane raisers, are keeping them in not such great conditions, and they're also slaughtering them. You know, there's no such thing as humane slaughter, and if anyone says there is, then we need to have special treatment for those people. So,
I can tell you that we could do a whole show on that topic alone, because I've extensively researched poultry slaughter. The birds aren't even covered by the so-called Federal Humane Methods of Slaughter Act, and not that that would protect them. It doesn't protect the animals it supposedly protects. But the point is, they're not even covered by that. You know, they and there are people who say, "Oh well, you know, throat cutting isn't painful." Where are they coming from?
Oh, boy, unbelievable. Right. Karen, thank you so much. And by the way, Karen Davis, you can find a lot of interesting and very enjoyable reading on www.upc-online.org. That's United Poultry Concerns, upc-online.org. Karen Davis, founder and president of United Poultry Concerns, and an author of many valuable books, and someone who has led a movement that really needs to be led. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Bob.
Karen Davis of the United Poultry Concerns. And on that note, we are going to cut off quickly. I want to thank you for listening to all of this. It's obviously not a pleasant topic to hear about, whether you're eating chickens and turkey or not. But if you are eating them, you have an out. And the out is easy. And as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, we can either listen to those old, tired voices from the past century saying, eat your chicken and eat your turkey, or you can listen to this information and put it into action in your own life. You don't have to keep eating what you've been eating. This will not continue, because the truth is in such stark opposition to what we all stand for that there's just no way this can continue in our civilized society. We can blame it in the past on people having needed to do this. Well, we've needed to do a lot of things in the past, like having slaves and all kinds of other stuff. We grow out of that, and it is time. And that again was a recording from September of 2015 with Karen Davis of the United Poultry Concerns, who passed away this month. You can find out more about the United Poultry Concerns at www.upc-online.org. That's upc-online.org. United Poultry Concerns is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the compassionate and respectful treatment of chickens, turkeys, ducks, and other domestic birds. They hold that the treatment of these birds in the areas of food production, science, education, entertainment, and humane companionship situations has a significant effect upon human, animal, and environmental welfare. They continue to seek to make the public aware of the ways in which poultry are used and to promote the benefits of a vegan diet and lifestyle. Karen, we miss you, and again, so appreciate the enormous task you took on against all odds. You're leaving big shoes to fill, but your message continues to reverberate in our minds, hearts, and actions. And so I see the impact of your work as only just beginning. And that'll do it for this evening's show. I'll be with you again at this same time on Friday, December 15th at 6 p.m. and every month thereafter on the first and third Fridays of the month. When I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives with great hosts from Eugene Zamperone to Beth Viteni to Courtney Bozick to John Scardina, sharing cutting-edge information on health, our environment, social justice issues, and so much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more information on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org or email us to join our mailing list at info@healthyplanetusa.org. Also, like our Facebook page, which is at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. take action to make this world a better, more compassionate place, following the teachings of Karen Davis. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four and multi-legged friends. Consider a dietary change that allows your values to align with your actions. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we share. Good night.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
I love this song.
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.